Deadly Serial contains adult language, discussions of violence, and sexual themes. Listener discretion is advised. Try to have fun. Don't take us seriously. Welcome to Deadly Serial. I am Lee Moffitt. With me, as always, is...
Laura Dedrick. Welcome, everyone.
And we have a story today.
Oh my gosh, do we have a story. This is rough, but it has a happy ending, so I guess that's good. This is the Mary Vincent, a survival story episode.
God bless her.
She's a badass, and I'm going to try to explain and tell her story in the most sensitive and
respectful manner.
Absolutely, because it is really, really rough, you guys. But like I said, it has a happy ending, and this is probably my favorite survival story.
Yeah, I've only known bits and pieces of it. I can't wait to dive into it.
I got a lot, so okay, let's get to it here. In 1978, in Las Vegas, Nevada, a 15-year-old Mary Vincent lived with her 6 brothers and sisters and her parents, Herb and Lucy.
Hmm.
Yeah. Mary was a very talented dancer and an artist, and she was told by her instructors that she would have a real career in dance, and she'd already danced in Hawaii and Australia, so she was a really good dancer.
Damn.
Yeah. During this time, unfortunately, her parents were going through a pretty nasty divorce, and, you know, this was not easy, obviously.
No, never is.
Interesting random fact. Her father, Herb, was a slot machine repairman, which I thought was cool, and I never realized it was an actual thing, but it makes sense, you know, I guess.
Sure, yeah, somebody's got to fix those things. Yeah. Somebody's got to make sure that, you know, the more money goes in than out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And her mother, Lucy, was a Vegas card dealer, which is interesting, too.
That is interesting. Wow.
I feel like if you live in Vegas, a lot of the jobs are casino-based. Oh,
yeah,
I mean,
for
what
sure.
Else are you going to do?
Yeah.
I guess you could work in a little chapel or something. Like.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
There's a lot of weird jobs, but they're very specific.
Yeah, yeah.
Be a pawn star guy.
Yeah. Best I can do is $250. So anyway, the divorce, like I said, was hard on her, as it usually is, and she became just a little rebellious and started skipping school. She had an older boyfriend, but nothing too terribly crazy. This is kind of weird. That same year, her sister came to her and warned her and said that her dad was coming home, that he had a migraine and he was mad at her, and told her to get out, like, go. And for some reason, Mary decided to run away because of this. So I don't know what kind of relationship she had with her father, but it doesn't sound like it was a good thing.
No.
So yeah, she left home with her boyfriend. They made it to California, where they lived in their car for a little bit, but this didn't last, and Mary was soon on her own at the age of 15.
Wow, that turned bad real quick.
It really did. She's dancing, and then she's on the, you know,
on her own,
on the road, and she's 15. She's 15 through all of this. Please, like, keep remembering that. My God, she's only 15 years old.
She's a child.
She's a child. So she did have an uncle in California, so she stayed with him for the summer. So she wasn't completely without anyone.
That's good.
Yeah. So she stayed with him for the summer, but then she decided to hit the road again. She had decided it was finally time to go home, and she had a grandfather that lived in California as well. So she wanted to get to his house first, and it was in Corona, California, which is an unfortunate
name
for the times. So she set out to hitchhike. And, you know, we've talked about this before. Hitchhiking now seems so insane. And back then it was so damn common and just accepted.
Sure. Yeah. It was just another, it's like adventuring.
But then again, don't we do the same thing now basically with Ubers and Lyft? Like, just because you pass a background check doesn't mean that you're like a good person to drive people around.
That's true. I'm sure you have to pass a certain qualification, and you're always on GPS.
True. So. That's a good point. But yeah, super bizarre for most of us now, but it was totally common back then to hitchhike. On September 29th, 1978, Mary stood on the side of the road with a few other teenagers that were all headed the same way. She was going to hitchhike from Berkeley, where she was, to her grandfather's house in, you know, Corona. A blue van pulled up on the side of the road. And by the way, I've seen this van, and it is definitely a 73 rapist for sure. Like, no windows. I mean, it is, it's like a light blue color. It's a scary looking van.
Yeah, rape van.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I have candy kind of van. So immediately, now it would have been like a red flag, but
back then it's just a van.
Yeah, a lot of people have vans.
You remember our van that we had?
Which one?
The yellow one?
Yes, I do.
Talk about a rape van.
Yeah.
It's like a Penske van.
It was. Oh my goodness.
Good times.
Yeah. The man behind the wheel was Lawrence Singleton Larry. He told the other teenagers that were hiking that he only had room for Mary, and he told her that he would take her to Interstate 5. First of all, he looks like Father Time meets Popeye is what he looks like.
Yeah.
But because of that, he kind of reminded her of her grandpa. So she got in the van, but the other hitchhikers told Mary, like, this is super sketchy. Why would he only want to take you when we're all headed in the same direction and he has a van? Like, please don't go by yourself. But like I said, it kind of reminded her of her grandfather. So she left with him and she was just ready to be home. She was tired. She was done. So I'm going to, I just thought about this. I do have his name written down quite a bit, but I'm just going to say he for the most part, because fuck this guy.
Larry?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a prick.
He is. So Larry was a heavyset man in a mechanic uniform, and he told Mary that he had a daughter about her age, which was not a lie. He did have a daughter her age.
What the fuck?
Yes. But this made Mary feel even more at ease. You know, oh, he's got a daughter my age. He could be my daddy. He could be my grandpa. It's no big deal. It wasn't long until he got a little creepy after that. So when Mary would sneeze, he would put his hand on her neck and ask if she was sick. Like grab her neck and feel it. And like, are you sick?
Like feel her lymph nodes?
Yeah, like feel her lymph nodes, grab the back of her neck. And this freaked her out, obviously, but there's not much she could do at that point.
No.
They're going down the highway.
Yeah.
So she just tried to keep on her side of the van, like close to the door. But she actually ended up falling asleep.
Oh my God.
I know. But she, you remember, she's exhausted. She's a kid. And it was so common to ride with a stranger that she fell asleep.
Yeah. I guess back then, you know, like falling asleep would be like, okay, I gotta, you know, end this awkwardness. I'm just gonna go to sleep for a little bit.
We've talked about the weather. We've talked about sports. This is an uncomfortable silence. I'm gonna go to sleep.
Yeah.
When Mary woke up, it was dark and she could still see that they were going in the wrong direction and they missed the turn off for her Interstate 5 where he was supposed to take her.
Mm-hmm.
So she found like this kind of like sharp stick in the van and threatened him with it. She's like, you turn around, you know, turn around. What are you doing? And he's like, oh, it's just an honest mistake. And I didn't mean to make, you know, I didn't mean to miss the turn. And he turned around. He then told Mary that he needed to pull over on the side of the road to go to the bathroom. Mary got out too, and this was, okay, she was weirded out by this whole thing still, you know, with the sneezing and them taking, it's just weird. So she's got like that feeling. So she was now in the middle of nowhere with this guy, and she decided she was going to make a run for it at this time.
Oh.
I know. I'm okay.
She's just a little kid.
I know, she's 15. That's what I just kept reminding myself of. She's just so, so young. Like, what was I doing at 15? My God, I don't even know. Like, there's no way I could have done any of the things that she did at 15.
Playing Pokemon cards?
Right.
I don't know.
Who knows? As she was about to run, though, she noticed that her shoe was untied.
So she stopped to tie her shoe?
She bent down to tie her shoe. And when she did, he came up behind her and hit her in the head with a hammer and knocked her unconscious. And this is when the just absolute horror begins. All the triggers, people. Happy ending. So when she woke up, she was tied up in the back of the van. She was completely naked and her hands were bound above her head and her feet were tied. Okay. He forced his mouth on her raped and sodomized her many, many, many times over and over again, which is horrific. He said to her, and this is very disturbing, almost didn't want to say it, you'll be my good little girl.
Ugh.
It just makes me want to, like, I don't know, throw up and kill him with my bare hands at the same time.
Yeah, he's real, real piece of shit.
He's absolutely disgusting. He's one of the worst, I think.
Mm-hmm. Anybody who does anything to kids.
Yeah, and then this horrific. So after he had sexually assaulted her repeatedly, he passed out. And I forgot to mention earlier that he was drinking pretty much this whole time. He's just drinking.
Oh.
Yeah. So when he finally passed out, Mary tried her best to escape, but she was unable to get herself untied. And she said that she just wanted to die at that point. She said she asked God to kill her, which really just breaks my heart. Like, he didn't kill her, but he took everything out of her to the point where she's like, I just don't even want to live anymore.
Right.
So when he woke up, he did move her and the van to another location, but this was even further into the middle of nowhere. He untied Mary's hands and told her to do what he said or he would kill her. He then forced her to drink this strange alcoholic substance. We weren't ever really sure exactly what it was. He then sexually assaulted her several times. This time she passed out. This was like pretty much the only time she passed out during this whole time. I'm not sure if it was exhaustion, trauma, or that weird drink he gave her.
Yeah.
So.
Could have been combo. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. When she finally woke up, he told her to get out of the van and sit on the side of the road with her legs still tied. She is pleading with him, let her go. Please let me go. Set me free. This was when he grabbed an object out of the back of his van. Mary was clinging to his arms, like she was holding on to him, like she was holding on to his shirt and his arms. The object that he took out of the van was a hatchet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Mary looked up. Things happened so fast. She saw her hand and forearm severed. It was still grasping onto his shirt. So her severed arm was still holding on to his. Can you imagine just seeing your arm not attached to your body? I mean...
Yeah, it's shocking.
Yeah, he had hacked off her arm with a hatchet. And she fought like hell. I mean, we cannot stress enough how badass Mary Vincent is. Like, she fought really hard, to say the least.
Yeah, it's more than a survival instinct. It's I don't know. She's fucking badass.
She's like a superhero. Like, Yeah. She pleaded with him to let her go, and he said, okay, I'll set you free. And then... he began hacking at her other arm. This took 3 whacks of the hatchet, which is absolutely horrific. So it was 5 total. It was 2 for the first one and 3 for the second arm, because she knew what was happening at that point. She started like fighting back, obviously. Yeah. The first time she didn't even know what he had grabbed out of the van. He freaks out when he sees Mary's arm is still holding onto his shirt, and he starts flailing about, you know. So she decides at this point she's just gonna play dead. And this actually worked for a bit. So he thought she was dead, so he dragged her body across the ground. He then lifted her up and threw her. So she's, yeah, just a little thing. And then he said, you wanted to be free there, now you're free. And he had thrown her down a 30-foot ravine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's repeatedly assaulted her, cut off both of her arms, and now he's thrown her down a 30-foot ravine. And this fall broke her ribs.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised it didn't kill her.
This whole thing should have killed her.
It really should have.
So he not only did he throw her down a 30-foot ravine, he climbed down the ravine and shoved her in like a culvert drain pipe.
Oh, my God.
Yes. He left her there to die. She was a bloody, severely injured mess. But she kept telling herself, she's like, don't go to sleep, don't go to sleep. Because she knew if she did, she would die. So she kept fighting to stay awake. She fought so hard. She did say that she heard a voice saying, don't go to sleep, stay awake, and if you die, he's going to do this to someone else.
Very interesting.
Yes. So, okay, so here's a quote from her. He threw me off a cliff. I should have broken bones. I should have bled to death. I didn't, and I never passed out. I remember everything. I wanted to give up and go to sleep, but I felt someone there with me, a presence who wanted me to survive. A voice told me to get up and get help or someone else would die. That was her motivation. She's like, this guy's going to do it again if I don't get out and tell what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Even more badass. She's not even thinking about herself. She's like, I got to save somebody else.
She's amazing.
Absolutely amazing. So that was what gave Mary the strength to do what she was about to do. The thought of this happening to somebody else. She got her senses about her and kind of realized where she was. You know, she saw that she was in a ravine. It was then that she packed her severed arms with mud to try to stop the bleeding. And she set out to climb up that 30-foot ravine. Can you imagine doing that with no arms?
I don't think I could do it with arms.
I don't think I could either. I mean, you would have to like use your open wounds at some point to get leverage or catch yourself, which just sounds absolutely awful. This point, she had lost 50% of her blood supply, which is insane. About 14% blood loss for most people, you start to feel weak and dizzy, and she was at 50% blood loss.
That's insane. How's she even walking around?
She's a machine. Climbing up that ravine took Mary hours. Hours. As she got closer to the top, she could hear cars from the highway, and she knew if she could just get up there, she would be saved. So that was like, she's like, I just got to get her. This is so terrible. She held her arms above her head to hold in the muscles and to slow the bleeding. So this whole time, like, she's just trying to hold her poor arms up.
Oh, God.
I know. It was actually night by the time she made it up the ravine. She then had to walk 3 miles to the highway.
With 50% blood and no arms.
Yeah. No arms, yeah. After climbing that ravine.
Wow.
And remember, she's completely naked. She has no arms. Like you said, she's a bloody mess. This is rough. So a car with some teenage boys stopped and pulled over. But when they saw her, they just sped off. I guess she was just too scary looking for them.
I can imagine it being shocking. But yes. I mean, to not stop and help is just, I don't know. It was baffling to me.
Yeah, I don't get that either. She did say later that she didn't blame them for doing this, that she knew what she looked like and she knew she must have been, you know, just a mess.
What a bad bitch. Like, she doesn't even blame those guys.
She needs like, she is a badass bitch. I mean that with all due respect.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my gosh.
We don't mean that in a bad way.
No.
Soon after the car with the teenage boys sped off, a couple that had just taken a wrong turn, they pulled over. They helped her. They put her in a blanket and they drove her to an airport because you had to drive to the nearest phone, you know. It's 78.
Shit, yeah.
So they drove there and they called the police and she was taken to the hospital and treated.
Wow.
Yeah. They just took a wrong turn, you know, and just happened to come upon her and actually stopped to help her. So like I said, she was taken to the hospital and later she was able to tell the police everything in excruciating detail. Like I said, from the time he severed her arms to the time she was found by the couple, she never once passed out. Because, I mean, she would be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was actually able to describe Larry Singleton so well that the composite sketch looked like a photo of him.
Wow.
Yeah. Again, badass chick right there.
Remember in detail like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, not only did she do everything she did, she also helped the police so much, like every detail. Just as Mary was learning to use her new prosthetic arms, Larry Singleton was actually turned in by his neighbor who saw the sketch.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that's Larry. Please come get him.
Yes.
We need to talk about Larry. Like I said, I don't want to talk too much about Singleton. He did have a daughter Mary's age, and he was an ex-merchant marine and a real bad alcoholic. So with Mary's help, police began to build a case against him. They found her clothes and cigarette butts at his house. They also found the blue van. The interior had been taken out and washed, which is super suspicious.
A little sus?
A little bit. Between the time of the brutal attack on Mary and when he was caught, he did try to commit suicide, but he was not successful after he was found by a neighbor, which is unfortunate.
Shit.
Yeah, he took some sleeping pills and tried to do the exhaust thing in the car.
Oh.
Yeah. And he's guy's like, hey, Larry, you okay in there?
I was just having some trouble with the shifter here. It's jammed. I couldn't get it in a drive. I mean, reverse.
And after he looks at her, he decides he wants to live. Sorry, we're dropping Office Space references. So yeah, he didn't kill himself. So once he was picked up, he denied having anything to do with Mary's attack, even with the evidence mounted against him. This was his story. He said Mary was in his van, but he said that she was a $10 a night whore. And that is his word. But he also said he picked up three people that day. He picked up Mary and two men. He said one of the men was named Pedro and the other one was also named Larry. Yeah. He said that they had been to a bar, that they left, and that all three men paid Mary for sex, which is not true, obviously. He said he passed out after, and when he woke up, the other Larry was driving. So far, you know, he's still convincing with this story. He's such an idiot. He did say that Mary was no longer in the van at the time. He said her clothes were still there, but she was gone. And the other Larry told him that she had been sent to California, and that was all he knew.
Okay.
I feel like
this doesn't really check out.
It really doesn't make any sense there, Larry. And it didn't, and they didn't. No, they knew. They knew what happened. 6 months later, Mary testified against him. She testified he was in the room. When asked if she could point out her attacker, she raised her prosthetic hook without hesitation and pointed at Lawrence Singleton. It's a powerful moment right there.
Yeah, it is.
Damn. This is haunting. In the courtroom, when Mary passed him, he whispered, "I'll finish the job if it takes me the rest of my life."
Oh my God.
So this is absolutely infuriating to me. Singleton was sentenced to only 14 years for rape and attempted murder. And in California at this time, this was the max sentence, 14 years.
Wow.
The judge in the trial said, if I had the power, I would send him to prison for the rest of his natural life. Okay, Lee, are you ready to be mad?
Yes.
Dude served only 8 years and 4 months and was released early due to good behavior. Eight years.
Yeah. 8 years. Unbelievable.
Mary really struggled during this time. I mean, she had terrible nightmares of the attack. She was frustrated that she couldn't do the things she used to be able to do. People looked at her differently and she felt like a freak, which is really sad. But she's still so young, you know, for that to happen to you so young, you have to, that would be hard for anybody, you know?
Especially, you know, like, yeah, during that time in your life.
Such a hard time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she couldn't paint. She couldn't even dance anymore. They had taken some of the muscles from her legs to save one of her arms. So due to the weakness in her muscles, she was unable to dance. Despite all of this, Mary did go on to graduate high school. She went on to have two sons, and she said that she always wanted to be a mother, and it really gave her something to live for. So that kind of really changed her life when she became a mother.
As it often does.
Yeah. And by 1988, Mary was doing much better. She was living in a small town in California with her sons. It was that year that Larry Singleton was released. After he was released, he did try to sue Mary for kidnapping. He sued her for attempted kidnapping of him.
Oh my God.
And you know that was overturned, obviously, thankfully. She did sue him and got like over a $200 million settlement, but he had nothing. So he had $200 in his bank account and had nothing else. So she didn't get any money.
No.
So fun fact, the Singleton bill was passed to deny early release of criminals who have tortured their victims, as well as give the ability of the court to give the sentence of 25 to life. So that's good because of that guy. They're like, we got to put these people away for a little longer than 8 years and 4 months. So with him being out and about now, Mary didn't feel safe, of course, and she went into hiding with her young sons. She hired bodyguards. At one point, she was living in an abandoned gas station. She was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
I know. He's still torturing her in a way.
Yeah. Psychologically.
Yeah. After his release, he did do short stints in jail for stealing like piddly little shit, like a $3 hat. And he'd play it off that he was just a confused old man. I don't know anymore.
I thought I paid for it.
I paid for it. But it wasn't these little thefts that Mary fought to prevent. On February 19th, 1997, Singleton killed again.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could have seen that happening.
Right? Oh, so frustrating. It was when a neighbor was working outside. He began to hear strange noises coming from the Singleton house. He went over to investigate, and through the window, he saw a naked man choking a naked woman in the living room.
Okay.
Okay. He called 911, and he told the dispatcher that he could hear bones cracking.
Oh.
Ugh. When the police arrived, they found Singleton naked and covered in blood with a lifeless naked woman lying on his couch. The woman was Roxanne Hayes. She was a 31-year-old mother of three and a sex worker. She had been stabbed multiple times with a butcher knife. Mary was absolutely distraught after she heard about this. I mean, she fought so hard to prevent this from happening. And just because of the justice system, she wasn't able to prevent it. I mean, that's not her fault, but she did feel responsible that.
Sure.
Like, it's her fault that somebody got killed again. And it totally wasn't. She did everything she could.
Mm-hmm.
So Singleton claimed that he met Roxanne in a grocery store and agreed to pay her $20 for sex. He claimed that once they got to his house, she wanted more money and she tried to get it out of his wallet. He said she threatened him and it led to him defending himself, which was him stabbing her just repeatedly.
Yeah.
Nobody bought this. And Mary ended up testifying against him again. She again went over every excruciating detail of her attack. To this day, Mary only refers to him as her attacker, which I like I was talking about earlier. Now, he just doesn't even deserve a name. After Mary's compelling testimony, he was sentenced to death for the murder of Roxanne Hayes, but he died of cancer on death row at the age of 74. Mary says that she never let herself indulge in hate and anger over what happened to her, saying she wouldn't be here if she had. And I totally understand what she's saying. Like, if she had just let hate consume her over this, I mean, she just wouldn't have been able to survive. No,
she would have drove herself crazy.
Somehow find a way to let that shit go.
Mm-hmm.
She is a fierce advocate for women's rights and is a self-proclaimed tinkerer. This is very interesting. I found this interesting. She used old radio and refrigerator parts to upgrade her basic hook prosthetics. She actually made like fingers that can move independently. She can do art. Her art is fantastic. I actually have a number that I'm going to put, like, I'm going to tell you guys to contact her to get her art. She's a really good artist.
And she could really use some help too.
She could. She's having some struggles right now, but today she is an artist living in Gig Harbor. She has two sons, 16-year-old Luke and 14-year-old Alan. She has a parrot with a feisty attitude. Couple of dogs, hamsters, a tank of fish, and a 21-year-old boyfriend whom she calls Mr. Right.
Hey.
Good for her.
Mm-hmm. His last name is Mr. Right.
Is it? Oh, yeah, that's right. His name is Kurt Wright, who she calls Mr. Right.
I think that's cute as fuck.
I think it's adorable. And she's doing good. She's fucking fierce, and she's in great shape, and she's always painting and doing, like, she's just happy and living life, and she's amazing.
Yes, she's an inspiration to everybody. It was amazing. It's an amazing story, and it's very inspirational.
Mary Vincent.
You got the number?
Oh, yes. Let me tell you guys the phone number, just in case anyone wants to contact her about her art and help her out a little bit. The number is 253-858-1105. So, yeah, she is very talented artist, and I just wanted to throw that out there. Contact her about her art.
Yeah.
Support her out. She's a badass superhero woman. Actually, a lot of her art is of like female samurais, and it's like women empowerment shit, and it's really awesome.
Oh,
she's
man.
Just the coolest. Like, she's like the coolest person, you know? So yeah, that was Mary Vincent. Amazing survival story.
Mary Vincent. What a gal.
What a amazing gal. So we got something very, very exciting coming up over the next 2 weeks, right?
Heavy hitter.
Going back to
our roots.
Yeah. We're going to do a two-parter on that. And we're just going to keep on trucking.
Yep. Full steam ahead.
Email us at deadlycereal@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or corrections.
Oh, please. Yes.
We do not mind.
Any corrections. We love corrections.
Gina, you're awesome. We love your emails. You are hilarious. And
yes, yeah, Gina.
Yeah. Appreciate you.
Thank you for your continued support. It means so much to us.
Absolutely. We appreciate it. Thanks for sticking with us as we mix some things up a little bit. It was fun. We're going to keep doing it. But like I said, next week, heavy hitter.
I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, we're probably going to be very disturbed by the time these 2 weeks are over.
Oh, yeah. I've already started research and I'm already starting to have nightmares.
Are you getting down? Yeah, you and your nightmares, man.
It hasn't even started yet.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, we haven't even scratched.
2 weeks of this.
We haven't even scratched the surface of that. That's going to be, whoo, you're going to have Kemper and our next heavy hitter in your living room. Yeah.
Oh, my God. What a combo.
Goodness. Yeah, that is an interesting combo for sure. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we appreciate you guys, and we'll catch you next week with a new episode.
Stay safe out there.
Bye, guys.
Please follow us on all social media platforms. Any questions or comments, email us at deadlycereal@gmail.com. If you would like to support this podcast, the link is in the description.